Reading FC proved that there is no such thing as rusty legs at the Badeski Stadium this season with a fantastic 3-0 win over Coventry on Tuesday night after an impromptu weekend off due to the Brentford COVID-19 outbreak that has meant that we will be facing the Bees in a massively anticipated promotion clash a little later on. But for now, it was Coventry on the Tuesday night, a 3-0 win. Welcome to the Tarnhurst Den. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, and joining me in an unusual, immediate post-game podcast. This is the excitement, the raw emotion that must be coursing through us right now. Ollie Allen, how's it going, mate?
I am very well, thank you. Yeah, it's always great to record straight after a game, especially when you've won 3-0. So still very much on that emotional high right now.
Absolutely. The kind of deliberate decision that we make usually to record maybe on the Monday afternoon after a game, but when the dust has settled, all of the news and everything has come out, we can have a calm, reasoned look at a game. But not tonight. This is the febrile atmosphere that we would like to be in at the Badeski Stadium right now. And just before we go into the weekend, a big thank you, as always, to the sponsors of this podcast, ZCZ Films, who continue to do us good, and hopefully the entertainment industry struggling at the moment. We're very happy to give them a name check and to shout that from the hilltops, and also for our Patreon subscribers who continue again to put their hand in their pocket and just help us along those virtual tip jar coin at that we put into the show, and hopefully shows off in relatively decent production values. But nothing is as good as a win for Reading FC, so let's go on into the recap now and talk about that.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Okay, so let's just kind of clear up basically what happened. The reason we're recording this on Tuesday night as opposed to a Sunday night or whatever is because the Brentford game is postponed on the Saturday. So Reading are now kind of, we're not actually in the cluster of teams that have a game in hand because we played tonight, and there were teams that have had much more sort of postponements and everything going on. But Reading had a few days break then into the Tuesday night game. And Ollie, to the first thing that I noticed, we played, I think this was the first time since the second week of the season, we've played Elise, Swift and Ejaria in the 11 from the off. And really, you can probably argue that maybe Akinmete is in that as a first choice sort of starting lineup. But really, for me, this was the first choice midfield and attack that I've been wanting to see for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted during the game that, when all of those four players are fit, then Panovic has a very big choice to make, because there's pretty much quality everywhere you look, and adds Lucas Joao into the mix as the lone striker. And it's for me, it is one of the best front fours, if not the best front four in the Championship. And as you say, there's not been too many sort of scenarios where all four players have been fit so far this season, whether there will be, come into the campaign, I don't know. But yeah, it was, John Swift, we know the quality he's got. Obviously, he's missed a lot of this season through injury, but he was fantastic tonight, with a superb sort of ball over the top for Lucas Joao's goal, and then just that incredible free kick that I think very few other players in the division could score. It's a fantastic strike. But yeah, I think Panovic has a very big decision to make when Akinmete comes back fit, because it's not an easy decision to make.
Yeah.
With those four players, trying to put them into those three attacking midfield slots. For me, probably at the moment, Ovie Ejaria probably drops out when all three are fit, with Elise on the left, Swift in the middle, and Akinmete on the right. But as I say, it's a good problem for him to have, I think.
No, absolutely. And this is the thing, I suppose, we can, you can discuss all of the players individually, but I suppose from tonight, you kind of saw all of those three midfielders at their best at points, because Elise was very tricky on the ball, played a few nice passes for the second goal, certainly did, won quite a lot of free kicks, actually, with just neat little touches here and there, which was really useful for Reading in terms of bringing the game out from the back. John Swift, as you say, with that great free kick, and the assist for the first goal. Ovie Ejaria hitting the post in the first half with a really nice piece of play from him. So, yeah, it's really nice to see those guys all back together, and certainly Reading benefited from that on a Tuesday night. However, we started the game Reading did try quite hard to concede in the first 15 minutes. An early gift from Tom Holmes, really dreadful pass across the D, which just went to no one and was saved before McIntyre managed to clear away the rebound. They had another great chance with a header on 13 minutes. And when Reading actually took the lead, this, I think, was the first attack.
Yeah, we didn't start well at all, I have to say. You know, and it certainly looked as if, you know, it was true that a lot of those players hadn't played, obviously, since the 2nd of January against Huddersfield. You know, the fact that the breadth of the game was postponed, you know, meant it was been 17 days, sorry, for the majority of those players. You know, very few of them played in the FA Cup. So, you know, it looked like a team that hadn't played that much, didn't have that much match fitness, and yeah, I thought it was probably against Girona play that we took the lead. You know, I'd imagine Mark Robbins might have been quite upset with that, because I thought Coventry, you know, started pretty well. You know, they looked a little bit sceptical themselves defensively, but going forward, you know, they were a real threat. You know, there's not an awful lot of goals in that Coventry team. It's, you know, we probably saw tonight, you know, why, you know, they are perhaps not as high as they might want to be, because they are creating chances, but they've not sort of got that quality going forward. I mean, I know they brought in Victor Gyökeres from Brighton on loan, and he got his first start for them tonight. But they've done very well to get where they are in the table, but you can see why they're not quite as high as perhaps some other teams are, because they haven't got that quality to put the ball in the back of the net. And then in contrast, Reading showed why they are now third in the table, because, you know, Lucas Schell just needs that one chance. You know, we know the quality he has, and, you know, we've seen him score goals like that all season long, where he uses his strength, uses his you know, skill on the ball to put the ball in the back of the net. And that's the difference between the sides, you know, sort of struggling bottom half of the table and a side like Reading, who are third now, is that quality going forward. And Reading had that with you know, great ball from John Swift and a great finish from Lucas Schell.
Yeah, I would agree on Coventry that they're actually a pretty decent team, certainly in the kind of, you know, either third, they're not going to give you loads of chances. Certainly in attack, they always feel like they're quite dangerous. But yeah, you're right, it's about getting the ball over the line. It's so difficult. And that's kind of, as Reading are proving at the moment, it was almost two in the, you know, the end of the first half. Michael Elise had a scuffed effort. Obviously, Jai said hit the post. Lucas Schell had an effort saved, and then a far post, almost a tap-in, you could kind of argue, but he put it wide. Towards the end of the first half. And Reading actually had seven shots in the first half, which was as many as Coventry had in the entire game. They had three shots on target in the first half. That's more than Coventry had in the entire game. So certainly shows their dominance in that sense. And 30 seconds into the second half, I think it's probably the perfect time to score. But it's better, in my opinion, than scoring just before the halftime break, because players, you know, they have some sort of ability to react or to be turned around by their manager if they've just conceded before half-time. But if you've had all of your half-time preparations and then you immediately concede, I think that's much more difficult for a team to bounce back from. So Andy Rinomata popping up from Lucas Schell's ball in, a left-footed finish from the D through a massive old crowd. And I think that was his 100th appearance or something, they said, Ollie, and a really good moment for him.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, especially, as you said, it's the perfect time to score, especially when you're 1-0 up. You know, because I'm sure Coventry will have gone into the halftime break, as they say, not out of the game by any means, and had their own chances, and might have felt as if they'd be able to get back into the game second half. So for Reading to go and get that goal early doors second half was the perfect timing. And, you know, I think if that goal hadn't have come, then, you know, things start to get perhaps a bit nervy. You know, the longer it goes on without scoring and making it 2-0, you know, 1-0. You know, the saying goes that 2-0 was a very dangerous scoreline, but I'd argue that 1-0 is even more dangerous, because, you know, Coventry have got an easy route back into the game at that point, when it's still 1-0. And yeah, to go 2-0 up so soon after the break, you know, and always nice for an academy graduate to score. And sort of Rinomata's gone a bit under the radar this season, but he's not really put a foot wrong for me. I think, you know, others might have sort of caught the limelight, you know, especially Josh Laurent next to him, but Rinomata has continued to sort of be that solid base at the midfield, especially sort of with Josh Laurent having more license to sort of drive forward a bit more. Rinomata's been, you know, that solid player in front of the back four, and formed a great partnership with Josh Laurent. And it probably says a lot of sort of what we've come to expect of Rinomata, just to go out and do his job. That he's not really put a foot wrong, but he's not, maybe not got the credit that he deserves so far this season, but to get a goal is obviously a great moment for him on his 100th appearance, which is, as I say, is great for someone to have come through the academy. You know, obviously not a local lad, but he's been with the club for, you know, since he was sort of 17, 18. And for him to clock up 100 appearances now is obviously great for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was also a good moment for Lucas Shaw, as I say, getting the assist. That's his fifth assist of the season, to go on top of 17 goals. All of his assists actually have come in games where he's also scored. So you can tell just that, you know, Lucas Shaw, I think there's only one league game where he scored more than one goal, and that was the Huddersfield game. So he really spreads his goals delightfully. I'd say that's probably one thing that George Puskas kind of doesn't do. He scores, you know, a brace here, or, you know, he's got a hat-trick before, hasn't he? Whereas Lucas Shaw really does kind of notch one, and that's kind of his game. And in terms of these points, they were basically secured when Carl McPhantom was sent off after 70 minutes. Only moments later, John Swift made it third with an absolutely stunning free kick. I don't think there were any real worries about John Swift when he came back from injury, Ollie, in terms of how he was going to perform or anything. We all kind of knew that he was going to be very solid and hopefully at the level that he was last season, where I think he was one of our best players. And to have him, you know, slot in so quickly and so seamlessly is absolutely huge.
Yeah, massive. I mean, like, I think we were all perhaps a bit worried when he got injured. You know, I think it was the second or third game of the season. And that, you know, I think really Reading didn't really miss him. Obviously, you know, the table shows that, you know, they went on that fantastic run at the start of the season without John Swift, you know, and stayed sort of fourth, fifth in the table until he came back. And, you know, there were perhaps question marks of whether he'd be able to actually get into that side. You know, certainly with the form of Michael Olise sort of taking that number 10 spot. But yeah, it was just a reminder tonight of his sensational quality. You know, I said it earlier, but, you know, that ball over the top to set up Lucas Shaw, you know, we've seen him play that sort of pass time and time again. It's pinpoint. It's such good quality. And yeah, that free kick is, you know, you watch it go in and the keeper's got absolutely no chance. You know, we know how good John Swift is from dead ball situations, but, you know, that's, you know, 30, 35 yards out, and he's put such power on it and such accuracy. As I say, the keeper's got absolutely no chance. And, you know, from that point, yeah, the game is won. I think the game was probably won at 2-0, to be honest. You could see Coventry's heads drop, and certainly those two tackles from Carl McFadden struck of a man who knew he was beaten. You know, he had an absolutely torrid evening. You know, Michael Olise, Ovie Ejaria, Lucas Shaw, you know, just constantly just drew fouls from him because he couldn't handle it. He had a horrible evening, and, you know, you could see the look on his face when he got that second yellow card to get the red card. Is, you know, he knew that he'd been run ragged, and that's always a great sign that Reading sort of put in that professional performance. You know, they could have sort of stopped it at 2-0, but they kept on going, trying to get that third, trying to get the fourth, and it was a very, very professional, clinical performance, and that's the sign of teams that want to get promotion. So yeah, you know, especially after losing 3-2 to Coventry early in the season, it was fantastic to get such a convincing win this time around.
Yeah, straight after that Swift goal, Swift's actually taken off, and Rinomos and Ajari were arrested shortly afterwards. Saw a brief glimpse of Dejan Tetek, the young Anglo-Serbian midfielder who is coming through the academy at the moment. And really, I mean, the last thing to talk about in terms of the recap is, I mean, we got Watford playing at the moment against Barnsley at home. So potentially they'll be getting 3 points in that, which I think will take them back above Reading and put Reading into fourth. That would mean that we'd be playing Bournemouth. Well, obviously, there were lots of games in hand. Brentford at the moment, 2 points behind us, 2 games in hand. Bournemouth, we actually have a game in hand on. And then Middlesbrough have a game in hand. They're currently in seventh. And what are they, 7 points behind us? Yeah, so really, in terms of who we might be playing in the playoffs, for argument's sake, Ollie, let's say that it'd be Bournemouth. Would we fancy ourselves going into something like that? I suppose really looking at the top six right now, Norwich, you could probably say, are going to be decent, or at least continue to be decent. Brentford, I think they've not lost in months, and potentially my pick for that second place at the moment. And then you've got Swansea, Bournemouth and Watford are the other teams in the top six at the moment. I think any of those Reading would fancy themselves on. And to be honest, I think any of those games as a playoff tie would be a bit of a coin toss.
Yeah, I think it's very, very evenly matched in that top six at the moment. I agree. I think Norwich and Brentford might probably not run away with it, but will almost quite comfortably take those top two spots. But sort of below them, you know, it's sort of a gaggle of teams, Reading included, who are almost quite inconsistent. You know, you would have, you know, thought that Bournemouth would have got a win over Derby tonight, but they lost that one. That was their second defeat in a row after losing to Luton at the weekend. Again, that's not a game you would have thought that they would have won. And, you know, you look at Watford, who are inconsistent. You know, can't really seem to string sort of two wins together. Swansea seem fairly solid, but have got a defeat in them. You know, they themselves lost to the Derby only a few weeks ago. So that there are teams sort of below that. Obviously, you know, Brentford are fifth at the moment, but have got games in hand that, you know, one of which is against Reading. But as I say, I'd expect Norwich and Brentford to be that top two. But below them, yeah, it's, you know, it's great to be talking about Reading in amongst those group of teams, because, you know, come the start of the season, you know, Bournemouth, Watford, Swansea, you know, you might have said would have been up there anyway. But to say that Reading now have very much put themselves in that mix is great. And obviously, you know, the next few weeks are key. You know, we're continuing with this revenge month theme that Veljko Paunović and Tom McIntyre have talked about, that Reading's sort of next few games now are against teams who they lost to in the first half of the season. And obviously that includes Bournemouth and Brentford and Stoke as well, you know, sort of who've made a few good signings this month and sort of seem to be, you know, putting themselves in that playoff picture. And obviously Preston at the weekend as well. So, yeah, you know, this next month is big for Reading, because, you know, not only are there games against sides that they lost to in the first half of the season, of course Coventry included in that as well, but they are games against teams who are in and around them and sort of wanting to take points off them and, you know, try and get as high as they can. So it's a big month coming up, you know, but on the basis of tonight, obviously Coventry are a weaker side than sort of the Brentford or Bournemouth, but, you know, they've given themselves the foundation now to go on and hopefully, you know, kick on and get a few more good results.
Definitely. Well, if you have any thoughts on Reading's next few games and everything, the Timeless Den podcast will continue as always, and you can get your thoughts into the mailbag. thetimelessend@gmail.com is our email, and also the Facebook and Twitter. And with a bit of instant reaction, let's go into the mailbag then and see what you guys are asking us this week.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Okay, Sean Burgess kicks us off by asking, is Veljko Paunović the best looking manager we've ever had? The answer is Nigel Adkins. Sorry, Sean. Ollie, I don't know if you have any advances on that.
I always thought Jose Gomes was quite good looking. He was almost a Portuguese George Clooney, I think a lot of people called him. But yeah, I'd agree with Adkins and his tan. Might have been perhaps a bit over the top sometimes, but yeah, but between Adkins and Jose Gomes for me. But Pano is also a very, it's a great interview with him on Football Focus at the weekend, and he was dressed very dapper indeed for that. So he's certainly up there.
Yeah, he's certainly in around the mix. Gomes is a good shout. Definitely, and you know, I'm just a sucker for the Scouse tan of Nigel Adkins. That's certainly where it goes for me. Cole Murphy asking, if a red card appears in a forest but there's nobody there to see it, does it exist? And he says, for real, who should take free kicks, Swift or Elise? I think basically there were two moments that kind of argued as to why it's Swift for me. Obviously his goal, but also Elise, when he had his effort in the D that he'd won moments earlier, and it really was a rugby conversion. Perhaps wasn't the perhaps was the shoulder injury which he kind of came off with moments later. But yeah, I think that probably settles it for me. BM asking, why was Tom Kerridge commentating on Sky? I don't actually know who the pundit was or the commentator was this week. But we were the second choice championship game on tonight, so we weren't going to get the A team, as it were. Luke Redman asking, if we paid Sam Baldock minimum wage for the time he spends on the pitch, would it be a waste of money? Sam Igo, probably no relation, saying, how is Sam Baldock a professional footballer? And I think there was another Baldock question. Ross Webber saying, would you sell Baldock this window if one of those two transfers were allowed as a target man, someone more like Zhao, to come in as replacement? Sam Baldock, discuss all these. Came off the bench. I must admit my head was turned as he missed a chance tonight, but really continues to do kind of what you expect Sam Baldock to do, but not any more than that.
I mean, he should have scored that chance, I'll be honest. There's not an awful lot more you can say without sort of beginning to crucify the bloke. But yeah, you know, he should have scored one-on-one. He obviously he works hard, and I think Panovic does like him. You know, he's trusted him, and he was his only option really going up front before Christmas. Gave him the captain's armband against Luton, and he's brought him on in a fair few games. So he clearly trusts him, and I think he is a hard worker. But in terms of putting the ball in the back of the net, it's just not going for him at the moment. And I think once that sort of shot doesn't go in, his confidence is going to dip. And I think he just needs sort of one to go in for him. As I say, I quite like him as a bloke, but as a player, yeah, he's not going to be sort of that man if Lucas Jarl gets injured again, and obviously George Puskas is out for a while now as well. You wouldn't feel particularly confident in Sam Baldock being up front. I think there was a question on whether we should be playing him Melvin Lambert, and obviously that's a fair point as well. I think it might get to a point in the next few games if Baldock isn't, because you might come to a time where Panovic needs to throw someone on to try and get a goal, and if Baldock's low on confidence in that regard, do you try and throw on Melvin Lambert? Obviously missed a pretty big chance of his own last weekend against Luton, so it's sort of a toss up between those two at the moment in terms of who comes on, because as I said, George Puskas is injured, and you can't always rely on Lucas Jarl to stay fit. So Reading almost do need that sort of second choice striker at the moment. It's Sam Baldock, but yeah, not really going his way at the moment.
Yeah, well, I suppose the one player we haven't mentioned is Yaku Mate, who with those three midfielders of Lisa, Jari and Swift would in theory, or certainly in practice, even be a good alternative to Lucas Jarl as a striker. And Ben, as you said on the Twitter question, saying Panovic continues to impress and has been near perfect, but one flaw for me is he continues to pick Baldock as his sub, especially when we're cruising. It's a waste. And who Melvin Lambert could get valuable minutes. I think probably the logic in putting Baldock on when we're cruising is that if he scores the chance he gets tonight, then that can take him off and he can be a really useful substitute for us and be, a good player as a result. But, maybe that's the logic that isn't coming to fruition at the moment. But I certainly didn't know it was a case for having put Melvin Lambert on tonight. Peter Griffiths asking, why would Richards want to downgrade from this? Is Elise going to be Reading's first £100 million player? And is 106 under pressure? 106, I think mathematically speaking, we're out of this year, but 106 will probably be under pressure if we lose in the playoffs and are still in the division next year. Dave McCormack, then last question, that's saying, Tom McIntyre or Moore, discuss. And I think Tom McIntyre has quite quietly been going about a really steady job of being in the team recently. Tom Holmes had a bit of a difficult game tonight. That kind of, you do get that from young defenders, and Pavlovic wisely took him off. But McIntyre was very decent. I found in that chance that I mentioned after about 10 minutes when Holmes gave the ball away, you could maybe say that McIntyre should make more of an attempt to block the shot that comes in. And you can argue, oh, it's kind of luck that because he stays on his feet, he can then clear the rebound. But it's the fact that because he stays on his feet, he can then clear the rebound. So, I'm very happy with McIntyre at the moment, Ollie. In terms of Liam Moore coming back, I suppose it just perhaps it will be more of an issue when it comes to those sort of Brentford and Bournemouth games that we do really want him back for those ones.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I agree. I think McIntyre's been very good the last few weeks. Obviously, he's got the bonus of being a left-footed centre-back, so sort of he enables Reading to play out from the back in that sense. And obviously, he got the assist for Lucas Schell's first goal against Huddersfield a few weeks ago. So he definitely adds something to that to this Reading team that perhaps Liam Moore doesn't. I probably would, if both were fit, I probably would just about go for Liam Moore, because he's been excellent this season, to be fair, with before his injury. And there are probably a few question marks in the summer after he didn't end last season on the best of form and sort of end of the campaign out of the team. But I think he's come back in this year and done really, really well. You know, obviously it's great that Tom McIntyre's been given his chance because he certainly deserves it and he's played very well. But for me, I think Liam Moore is the better defender, which you would expect. You know, he's been playing the game for, you know, several more years and is the far more experienced option. But you know, certainly Tom McIntyre is one to continue to keep an eye on. Obviously his contract's up in the summer, but certainly for me worth renewing. You know, Michael Morrison's only got a couple more years left in him, I'd imagine, at this level. So Tom McIntyre is still certainly one to keep hold of and is by no means a bad backup for Morrison and Moore, as he's proven the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, no, it's interesting with McIntyre. Actually, funny enough, this week I started my Football Manager 21 game with Reading, and it said that Reading have, on his contract thing, it said that Reading have an option on Tom McIntyre to extend it for a year, which I was like, oh, that's interesting if Reading have an option on it. But then the game also said that we have an option on Omar Richards. And I thought that's probably would have come up by now if that's true. So I don't, yeah, it's interesting with the contract situation. I think really, you know, with all of the players, it is really a case, particularly you've got to remember the pandemic side of things and the financial aspect of that. So it really is just a case of waiting to see what division Reading are in, basically, and how everything's settled out in the summer, because it hopefully at least will be a very drastically different situation to what we're in now. Let's talk, I mean, there's not really many transfers to talk about. Let's kind of update you on how things are going in the transfer world and with the other Reading FC teams with News Bites.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Okay, I'm just kind of whiz through this because there isn't really too much information now as we get to the 19th of January, so we've still got a good almost a fortnight to go of the transfer window. Michael Elise won the EFL Young Player of the Month award last year, so big congratulations to him. Obviously, it meant a slew of, you know, this player is going to be playing in the Premier League article soon. He said that he wants to win promotion, maybe even win the league with Reading this year. But, you know, for next season or for the summer onwards, it certainly would be a question mark that Reading can hopefully answer themselves. Swindon midfielder Scott Twine has been linked, but kind of like an eh kind of link, nothing too major. In terms of the other football teams, under-23 is not in action until Friday. The under-18s also not in action until later this week. That's on Saturday. They host West Brom. Women's team, however, got a really good 1-1 draw with Arsenal last time out. That's after the Chelsea loss. They go to Aston Villa now on Saturday. They're sixth, but with the, you know, kind of mess around with the fixtures and everything, they've actually played more than anyone else in the league. So can't read too much into that at the moment. But, of course, plenty of games coming up. Let's jump now into Big Match Preview and round off the show with a talk about Reading's trip to Preston.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So, Ollie, it's kind of hard to know what to say about Preston in this because they're playing tomorrow after we've recorded. They're on three defeats in a row going into that game, but they're on three wins in a row previously. They've drawn twice all championship season, which is the lowest in the league. It seems like they're kind of, you know, on the surface at least, they're kind of an all or nothing team. They've won 10 games, which is only one less than Brentford, but they've lost 12, which is more or the same number as Rotherham. So really, it's hard to know whether we're going to, if we get the bad Preston, I suppose we'll win, but if we get the good Preston, it might be quite difficult.
Yeah, and we obviously got the good Preston, they're good, bad for us, back in November when they won 3-0. But yeah, it's sort of been, seemed to be much the same for Preston the last couple of years. You know, they are capable of sort of turning on a very, very good performance. You know, and they've certainly got some good players in their side, you know, the likes of Scott Sinclair, Daniel Johnson, who scored against Reading, I think, in November, is also a good player. And yeah, I think it's a game you would expect or you would want Reading to win. You know, if Reading are to be in that top six come the end of the season, you know, a mid-table side are the sort of team you want to be beating. I think, you know, part of Preston's inconsistent problem is that they aren't great at home. I think they're very good away, as proven in their 3-0 win in Berkshire early in the season. They've only won four, I think, just looking at it. They won 4 of 12 at home this season, obviously, but three of those have come in their last four home games. So, yeah, very, very hard to predict, but that they are, you know, it's this continuation of this revenge month that Panovic is talking about, that, you know, Reading want to get their own back on teams that beat them early in the campaign. And, you know, I see no reason now on the back of tonight's win that they can't do that against Preston on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at the teams that are around Millwall, Huddersfield, or around Preston, sorry, Huddersfield were beat, Cardiff were beat, Millwall, it was a draw in the end. Birmingham, obviously, we haven't gone away to them yet. Blackburn, that we've gone to and that we've beaten. There's certainly some, you know, there's good precedent there for thinking that Reading can go and get this win. And it certainly seems that, I think, Elise picked up a bit of a shoulder injury, but there's no other reason to believe that we might be kind of depleted going into the game. I don't think there's any sense that any other players are going to be returning, certainly not to the lineup. So, yeah, I think it's a difficult one to call, really. It's that classic Championship game, isn't it? That you can get yourself lulled into this false sense of security that Reading are going to, you know, continue to win and win and win and want to the playoffs or to an automatic promotion place. In reality, we have lost 7 games this season, so there is quite a decent chance we go and Preston have it on and we have it off, and that's how it is. I suppose that's just the nature of the Championship. But really, I think Reading have to go there in a lot of confidence. At the end of the day, they've won 3 of their last 4 in the league. The draw of that was away to Swansea, who are a very good team. So, yeah, I'm relatively confident going to it. Kickoff's at 12:30 on Sky Sports on Sunday, January 24th. So set your watches for that one. It's a game that's only really taking place because both teams were knocked out with the FA Cup. So it's an FA Cup weekend with a Championship game on as well. So in terms of predictions then, Ollie, what are you thinking for this one?
Yeah, I mean, just on that, I mean, I think it's good that Reading do have a game this weekend because there'll be a lot of teams. I think Bournemouth won their FA Cup tie. I think Norwich did. Brentford are playing Leicester. So there's a lot of teams around Reading that won't have games this weekend. And I think it's always good to have those points on the board. And, you know, Reading, you know, with a win they can't go to second, but they certainly extend their lead in third if they were able to get the win. So
yeah, we can with a 7-0 win.
That's true. It was 7 years ago, a couple of days ago, that we beat Bolton 7-1. So yeah, who knows?
History can repeat itself.
Well, yeah, I hope so. I think it's certainly good that our game is on this weekend, especially after missing out last weekend. But prediction wise, I think we should go there and win. Perhaps it might not be as comfortable as it was tonight. And again, it might well depend, and my opinion may well change based off how Preston get on tomorrow night. But I am going to go for a 2-1 Reading win.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 1-0 Reading myself. Preston aren't a huge scoring team. Just kind of checking the table. No, not too bad. But I think a 1-0 win is what I'm going to go for with that. In terms of, as you say, the fact that we are playing on the weekend, in terms of helping us going forward, it doesn't really make too much of a difference because Bournemouth are playing on the weekend as well. Neither us or Bournemouth are playing in the midweek after that before we then meet on Friday night on the 29th. So I guess it certainly helps us that we're playing, but Bournemouth also, you know, they're keeping to the same schedule. So no huge advantage in that sense. But yeah, this is going to be a really interesting game. And as I say, on the TV again, Reading been absolutely blessed this year in terms of being on the TV. I don't know if the club thought, but I suppose the club probably make more money out of us being on Sky than on more people watching us on iFollow. So I suppose they're probably doing not too bad as well. But it's actually been a real treat during this time when we can't go to games to have so many of our games on TV. So that will continue on Sunday. We'll be back after that game to discuss in our usual manner what Reading have been up to. But it's been an absolute pleasure, Ollie, tonight to join you for the talking of a 3-0 win.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's been an absolute delight. Thank you very much.
And Reading have knocked up the table once more into that top three position, although in reality, probably top four by the time you're listening to this. But as I say, Reading, 3-0 win against Coventry tonight. The midfield three are back together. Rinomota popping up with a goal. Lucas Shaw doing the business. John Swift with the spectacular strike. Velko Paunovic absolutely nailing it after a few days off for the Royals. What more could you possibly want? Well, let's go and get another 3 points on Sunday. Until then, come on, you Arse.
Funny how the crowds always leave a trail.